welcome to this episode of Superyacht Laundry podcast. I am here today with, I'm actually quite jealous of her, to be honest, because where she is possibly one of the most beautiful places on the planet. And I'm stuck in a very grey UK. So we'll see how this conversation goes. But I'd like to welcome Laura McKnight. How are you today?
I am great. Yeah. Super sunny in Bali. Done my yoga for the day. It's a great lifestyle. Yeah.
Shush. Like I said, I'm not sure if I'm going to enjoy this conversation. You know, I don't know whether it bodes well, and I'm just like, we've got a storm at the moment. It's not really a storm. You know, obviously the news is trying to tell us all that we're all going to die simultaneously freeze, drown, and burn to death. Generally, that's what most of it's going, but it's just a bit windy outside, you know. So yeah, sunny, tranquil, paradise, yeah. Mm-hmm. Bali. What yeah. on earth would make you want to live somewhere like that? I wonder.
Maybe the sandy beaches, the warm ocean. Yeah.
Right. So anyway, let's, before we get on to the annoying place that you live and what you do for a living now, let's go back into the mists of time. Where are you from, Laura? Where were you based before the yachting world found you?
I grew up in Southampton in the south of UK. And yeah, I was working as a holistic therapist in a 5-star hotel. And most of my guests were cruise ship passengers, actually, in the hotel. So naturally, I ended up transitioning to cruise ships.
Board the big ones.
Yeah, went on board the big ones, 3,000 passengers, 1,500 crew, and worked in the spa doing, body work and skincare, actually. Yeah.
Did you have many American, because people that I've spoken to that work on cruise ships, they always want the Americans because they tip.
This is true, but I was on a British cruise ship and they don't as much.
So I did it
for a year and a half and then transitioned to yachting. Yeah.
Where did you hear about, you know, on board, like obviously a cruise ship, do they talk about yachting? Is it common knowledge that, you know, it exists or?
Not so much, actually. Yeah, I didn't hear about it through that industry. I actually heard through a friend that was working as an engineer on the yachts. And he's like, what are you doing? Why are you on cruise ships? You know, because on cruise ships, as a therapist, you had no basic salary, zero. It was all commission based at the time. Yeah, so you weren't guaranteed an income. And if you had a port day with all the passengers off the ship, you could work 8 to 8 p.m. and maybe not earn anything. Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know if it's still like that.
That sounds okay if you've got, like I said, you know, loads of Yanks on board. But Brits, you know, obviously they do like quite like a spa, but I wouldn't probably say as much. And like you said, port days, you know, and they're all getting off. What are you supposed to do? Like, what was the money like when you were, you know, when you did do your time there?
Not so great. When I left that industry, I didn't have any savings. But, you know, my food was paid for. I didn't have to pay for my accommodation. So, you know, I was living there for free. I had no outgoing costs. So I was able to explore the world and meet amazing people from all corners of the globe. And yeah, go to places like the Caribbean, Singapore, Middle East, traveled the world. So it was worth it. You know, I was 19 at the time.
Well, that's quite actually, as 19 years old, that's probably quite a good way to start, You know, there's a lot of structure in it. And I would, you know, obviously the whole yachting industry is talking about professionalism and looking after people. Cruise ships are completely different. They're a lot more structured, proper HR. You know, it's probably a safer environment for a 19-year-old to step into, would you say?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, there's definitely a structure to the business, but it still has its pros and cons. And back then, you know, I remember in the crew bar, the crew hangout area, you're allowed to smoke inside the crew bar with no ventilation. And yeah, this was the thing. And even the crew accommodation where the crew lived, this was this common smoking area, was in the corridor. Wow. So you'd go to your cabin and it would just be misty fog of smoke and crew drinking in the corridor. And you had to have an agreement with your cabin mate, like, are we going to smoke in the cabin or not? And actually, it was the cause of so many fires on board. Yeah, so I think it's changed that now with regulation, but back then that's how it used to roll.
It's quite mad to think, you know, like, obviously now, I mean, when was it? When did they bring it in? I can't, 1990, I think. But you can't smoke indoors in the UK. To think of going and working in an environment, you know, where you have to make an agreement with your cabin mate whether we're going to smoke it. Oh, I don't think I could do that. I mean, I've never smoked. I mean, did you smoke?
Not at that time. When I was younger, for a short period, but not at that time.
No, it's one of those things. As soon as everywhere stopped, you can't, like, the smell is just, like, even to the point where, you know, you rent an Airbnb or like a flat or something, you can smell whether somebody smoked in there. So you've got a crew corridor. Literally with no vent. You go, what if you wanted to just go for a drink on your break or something like that? Like, you'd end up smelling like the fabric room.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting because it feels like in the yachting industry and the cruise ship industry, they're always like several steps behind where the world is moving, you know. So all these changes and regulations are happening in the UK, and it takes like years for those industries to like catch up with those rules almost. At least that's what I saw in the industry.
I mean, I would probably say, because super yachts are very sensitive to smells and stuff like that. Everything needs to smell.
Oh, yeah, that's different.
Love it. I don't know. I've never had that question come up. I'd like to ask some people from back in the day, like, what was the smoking situation like? It's bad enough when you have guests that have cigars on board, let alone smoking fags inside. All that fabric, you'd never be able to get the smell out. It'd be a nightmare. So you're on cruise ships, you know, I suppose cutting your teeth. Like, so you were like a health therapist? What were you on board the cruise ships? Like, what was your role?
Yeah. At one point I was specializing in skincare. So I was doing all the facial treatments and... Nice. Yeah, and then I became slimming specialist. So I was doing like contouring, slimming treatments for the body. And I teamed up with the gym instructor to do detox packages and help people lose weight on board, which is ironic. Because there's like unlimited food that people eat. But interestingly, yeah, people would come to us and come for nutritional advice and weight loss plans.
That is, I don't, you know, no offense to you, but I don't probably imagine that's quite very, very successful, you know, or it's like one of those, it's, you know, you're on a cruise, you're not really, you make yourself feel better. Like, I've been to see Laura, so now I can go get absolutely wasted and eat as much as I possibly can.
Potentially, right?
It kind of makes it worse.
It's like balance, isn't it?
Yeah, I wouldn't. It's like going on an all-inclusive holiday and expecting to lose weight. Not it. No, it's not. It doesn't happen. You know, I'm always chuffed if I come back from an all-inclusive and I'm about the same, you know. So, yeah, so after you're trying to keep people fit on a cruise ship, what, like, where did, you know, so obviously your friend mentioned it, he was an engineer. So you were like, yeah, what made you jump?
He told me about 6 months into my career on cruise ships. So it was in the back of my mind for ages. And he had told me the money is so good, the tips are outrageous, like you need to change. But I actually didn't believe him at first. So it took me about a year of my own personal research to discover that perhaps some of the things he was telling me were true. And when I left the cruise ships, I ended up with no money. So I worked in the call center selling cruises for about 3 months, saved enough money and took the courses, the CCW, the medical, and got the first plane ticket to the south of France to meet the agencies and, yeah, do the dock walking thing. But in fact, after just a few days, I had several job offers. I think there's always such a shortage of therapists in the industry. So yeah, jumped on a yacht straight away.
Well, you've probably, it's probably like, as a CV goes, it's really good. You've already tested the water. You've been on cruise ships for a while. They know, you kind of know the drill. And if you can make it on cruise ships, you can definitely make it on, you know, on yachts, as well as being a therapist. I think, you know, that's probably the ideal CV. So it doesn't, you know, doesn't, what did you think of on T when you got there?
I was so excited. You know, it's so easy to meet people there, meet other crew. You have the common hangout places and it has a beautiful feeling of community in that town. It feels like one of my homes. Yeah, I really miss it, stay? Actually. Sorry?
Where did you stay?
Me and my friends stayed. We actually rented accommodation together, so private apartments, and then other crew started finding out where we were living, and we ended up having like several apartments in a row, and we could open up our balconies and like go into each other's apartments. So we had a great time. Yeah, we were like cooking with each other and socializing and sharing each other's experience of, you know, how to get a job in the industry. How did the dock walking go for the day? But after 1 week, I had a job and the yacht didn't want me to join until a month later. So I ended up just staying for a month on holiday with all of these yacht crew.
That's horrible.
It was amazing, yeah. And then I joined my first yacht in Portsmouth, which is the sister, like, next door neighbour to where I'm from. And
you flew back to the UK to join.
Flew back to the UK. My mum dropped me off on my first day. Yeah, it was really cool.
Were you supposed to be cruising in the UK then? Was your yacht meant to cruise the UK?
Yeah, it was, the owner was British and we used to spend quite a bit of time there as well. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good if you wanted to catch up with family though, I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, it was awesome. For my first yacht, my family came on board and yeah, it was nice to see them from time to time. Yeah.
So obviously, you know, yes, you're a therapist, but on cruise ships, they didn't make you clean anything. So how did you feel going into your role?
We actually on cruise ships used to have a port clean every week when there was a changeover of guests. So we used to do a full deep clean similar to yachting, just not to that like level of detail. I actually picked up a book. It's called Yacht Stewardess Guide. I think it's still, you can still get it. And that tells you everything about the yachting industry and what's expected of you. So I was well prepared. I knew exactly what I was coming into, and what was required. So yeah, I was fully aware before.
What were your first impressions like being on board? So obviously a slight size difference.
Yeah, I mean, there's a huge difference in the level of service and the quality of work that you're doing. So, yeah, I was quite surprised at like the level of detail that you do the job to, cleaning skirting boards with cotton buds and cleaning dirt out of doorknobs with toothpicks, to this level is like, it's quite a lot to take in. But I was just super excited and super welcomed by the crew on board. And very quickly, they become like your family. So that was the first feeling that I had, just held, welcome, and yeah, family. Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite funny actually. I learned something new the other day. One of our other podcast guests said it takes 60 hours to make a friend, which really does probably explain why crew get so close so quick, because you're going to wrap up 60 hours really quickly. Probably in your first week you're done. And if that's kind of the benchmark of making friends, it's not really surprising that you end up feeling like a family, at all. But I learned something new the other day, because obviously everybody talks about, like, when you talk to people about what they miss, it's generally that closeness, the common goal, you feel like you're working with friends, but you are working with friends because you've already hit the most of the criteria of how to make a friend.
Yeah. And
So, sorry.
you're not just you're not just working with these people, you're living there, you're living at work, and in your spare time, you're spending your time together as well, going ashore, doing exploring, doing things together. So it's like more than you would experience in a normal situation, I would say.
Yeah. No, 100%. So, obviously, first boat. What were your highlights of being on board yachts? Like, what were some of your best times?
Wow, gosh. Well, the first yacht, the highlight has to be working with British Royal Family. That was probably the biggest highlight. Yeah. Doing a tour in the UK with some of them on board was, yeah, pretty special. And I think your first boat always has a special place in your heart, as your first experience. So I'll never forget those days. Yeah. And neither will the people I shared that time with.
I think as a Brit, when somebody says, "Oh, we've got some of the royal family," I don't think I've ever been more terrified in my entire life than when I was chief stew and they said they're bringing some of the royal family. I'm like, "What? What are you talking about?" I was literally like, "Oh, all the other nationalities on board." They're like, "I'm like, no, you don't understand. I'm ringing my mom." I'm like, "You'll never guess what's happening."
I was too scared to tell my mum. I was like, oh, I can't tell anyone, it's a secret. But I can talk about it now because it was in the news as well. So yeah, you can find it in the news. Yeah, so that was probably the highlight from my first boat. And gosh, there's so many, so many. I think the thing that always stays with me the most is the people I've met, and the connections and the bonds are the main highlights for me. Yeah.
Not just the royal family. I've met
Not
the
just the royal
royal
family. Yeah, that's secondary.
family. Oh, dear. So obviously you're on board, you're getting, did you go all over? Where did you spend a lot of your time? Europe or Did
Yeah,
you
we
get to go to
did.
the Caribbean and stuff?
Yeah, we did the milk run, so mostly Mediterranean in the summer. So all over from Spain, France, Germany to Greece, Turkey, etc. And winters would be in the Caribbean and US. So that was the standard routine every year.
If you had to pick a favorite, what would you pick?
My favorite spot to hang out in the Caribbean is Antigua. Again, for the community and meet the ability to meet other yacht crew in that space is amazing in that shipyard. And in the Mediterranean, I would say Antibes. Yeah, Antibes is my favorite.
It is cool. It is a special place in all of our hearts, you
Yeah.
know. And Drinkers Club has a special place in my wallet.
We should all have shares in that business, huh?
I don't know. Well, I was talking to a friend the other day because we've got obviously past friends that have worked on board as well. There's been loads of on Instagram. There's been loads of memes about rosé. So like, I don't want my rosé. The one literally I sent to some friends the other day that it has to come in the right. You know you're a rosé snob when it's not only the colour, it's the glass that it's served in. You get all like thinking about. There was this meme going around yesterday or the day before, and it was like my rosé can't be the colour of cow poll for any mothers out there. It's like bright pink. And also, I want to see the glass that you're going to serve it in because I've been hurt, emotionally damaged before. I was like, that's how it happens. We're all wine snobs. But to be fair, Drinkers had terrible glasses for ages. They had like these really small ones. Not saying that I needed to drink more, but like they had really small ones and they were really thick. But they've changed now. I know. I've been back and I've checked. So they've upgraded. But yeah, back in the day. No. But yeah, we all become hideous wine snobs. I dread to think thousands, thousands. You think about how many times I used to go back there. No, I used to go back to Antibes to meet up with friends, you know, like crew members that were off. We're like, oh, we'll meet there, shall we? So yeah, I think we should all, as an industry, take responsibility for rosé becoming the most incredible thing that it has across the planet. It's us, which is true. It's all us. We started a trend and it's spread everywhere. So when obviously having a great time on board, royal family, when did you start to feel differently about your time on board?
Well, I changed vessel and there was a culture on board this vessel which was quite extreme, I would say. Like
You being diplomatic.
burning the candle at both ends. And yeah, I guess I was there. I was on that boat for about 12 years. And the first 3 years in my early 20s were quite hectic on there. And my self-esteem had plummeted to rock bottom after about 3 years. And that's when I started to feel different about the industry. Like, can I stay and can I continue doing this? Or do I leave? Or do I do something about it?
What was the like? So 3 years of just partying too much? Like, what was it in those 3 years that changed for you?
I would say partying too much, working just crazy, crazy hours. And no time to rest, no time to recover. And that would extend into like my time off as well, because you kind of get hardwired into those patterns, into that lifestyle, and you take it into your free time, into your holiday. You go and keep yourself busy the whole time and drink all the time and just becomes kind of normal. Yeah, so after about 3 years, I hit my kind of rock bottom in the industry and realized that something needed to change. And that's when I first came to Bali. Yeah. And
Did you feel like you weren't acting like yourself? In those 3 years, did you just lose the sense of self and kind of go along with what was going on around you? Or were you kind of expecting, because obviously 20s is, it's your time to mess things up and experiment and all of those kind of things. I was just wondering, like, was it kind of getting caught up in the lifestyle? Or were you trying to work out where your boundaries were, what you wanted? And obviously the environment's not very forgiving. If you haven't got really strong boundaries, you're not, you're just going to go along with the flow, as they say.
Yeah, I think that was definitely true in my case. I was trying to fit in with the crew and kind of got swept away in the culture of what was happening on board. And I think in your early 20s, you're still figuring out who you are. You're still figuring out, yeah, your boundaries and your intentions and your kind of new to the world and exploring different things and trying different things. And I don't regret any of it, but when you don't give yourself nourishment and you're doing things that, I mean, ultimately, if you're drinking all the time, you're bringing your energy down, right? It's a depressant. So at some point, it starts to affect your self-esteem and yeah, that's what happened to me. I definitely got swept away in the movement.
It's really easy to do though, because it is fun. You do go out and you are having a laugh. It's not like this horrible environment that you're getting dragged into. It is fun. And obviously, it is also fueled with wanting to still have more good times with this new family. Like I said, it's like having a best friend on tap, to go out and have a laugh and joke. So, like for a 20 something year old, it's kind of, you're earning loads of money, you kind of have responsibilities, but not. So it's, like they say, it is what it is, but it's when you're in that experimental stage, I think it's quite a rigid environment. So then to try and find out what you like is quite difficult because the boat's only doing kind of one thing. And especially if you've always been interested in, health and, I mean, was there anything to do with health and well-being on board when you were there? Like, was anybody interested in doing anything healthy, sport, whatever?
Yeah, there was like a culture for the gym, I would say. And I was running the spa on board, so it was still like in my field, to be connected with health and wellness. Just in my personal life, I wasn't honoring that. And I had some of the best times in my life. And through those social environments, going out with the crew, I created some of the closest bonds that I still have today. So yeah, I had an amazing time, amazing, and so many great memories. But I can see that there was a price for that, for my own health and mental well-being, I would say.
It's unfortunate because also understanding what a boundary is when you're in your 20s is probably, that's part of the learning experience. So you can't set boundaries out if you've never really thought about what a boundary is and what its purpose is. So it's kind of like it's quite common for everybody. So you decided to go to Bali on holiday first. Did you bring the eco love and was like, yeah, I want to go?
I was looking for an anchor to keep me focused, and I was trying to figure out, okay, what hobby can I do, that will give me an excuse or like give me something else I can do rather than go out drinking with the crew all the time. And I used to do gymnastics when I was younger for many, many years. So I thought yoga's like gymnastics. I can do that. I can practice on deck. So I actually Googled where's the best place to learn yoga and what is the quickest way to learn yoga? And Google said, do a yoga teacher training in Bali. So I actually had never done an in-person yoga class before, and I straight away booked myself on a teacher training and just went for a full month, like intensive
Wow.
learning, like the deep, because I was, kind of a person of extremes in those days. And I was like, I'm going all in, I'm going all in. So there was this like devotion. And yeah, because I only had that, 1 month off. And I was determined to learn as much as I could that I could have my own practice on board.
Yeah, but teacher training, that's really intense.
Yeah, it was intense. And
Like,
I had
who has done
no.
it before? Like, I am, I can do yoga, but, teachers will be doing like some of the advanced stuff, and I'm not, How did you like when you first started? Like, because by that point, would they just be saying the names and you're supposed to already know the positions? But how did it
Yeah,
work? You just sat at the back for a bit.
I stayed at the back for a bit, and I made it clear in the beginning, like, hey, I'm not here to be a teacher. I just want to learn for myself. And a few weeks before the training, I bought a few DVDs. DVDs were the thing back then. And I started practicing those on board so I could start learning the names of the poses. So yeah, I like had five different classes just on repeat for the few weeks leading up to the training.
Wow. Well, that's pretty cool. Like it's pretty cool to just rock up to a teacher training. So like, have you been to Bali before?
Before that training, no, that was the first time, and it was the first of many visits. So after that teacher training, I'd never felt as good as I ever did before, and so I was addicted. I was like hooked on my new thing. So it became a priority in my time off to keep going back to Bali and do another training, do another retreat, learn more, so that I could keep developing my own practice, like whilst I was on board.
Cool. What's it like? What were your first impressions culture-wise? Because it's a bit quite a culture difference between the Western world and those kind of countries. How what were your first impressions?
My first impressions of Bali are just how the people here have so many rituals, like daily rituals of devotion to their gods, and daily gratitude practice. And the people, there are a lot of people that don't have so much, maybe money or material possessions, and yet they're so grateful and so happy. And you see in a lot of other cultures that people have everything. We see it on yachts, you have all the riches in the world, but sometimes still deeply unhappy inside. And so I was really intrigued to find out more about how the Balinese live their life and how to cultivate those feelings of, just, I guess like, just being grateful for just the small things. You don't need to have everything in the world. You don't need to have a big bank account and a fancy car and to be happy. You can have very little, and still be really happy.
Well, it's the opposite to yachts, really, isn't it? The opposite of the indulgence of yachts and yachting kind of thing. It's the opposite. Do you think that as obviously, if you kept going back, it became more and more important to you to go somewhere where it's more, no, is it more real?
Probably it's more a grounded. It's a different real, you know, everything in the world is part of this reality. But I think we can learn from each other, and yeah, there's just something so warm and inviting about this country, and the rich culture that's so attractive. Yeah.
So when it comes to, obviously you're doing yoga. So obviously, what was your actually like first impressions of yoga? You know, because obviously there's, when you start doing yoga, and I'm in a out cycle at the moment. I go through phases, like I go like all in for ages. And then kind of, I really need to go back because my lower back is shocking at the moment. But it does, you do get to a kind of click point with yoga. I think it just kind of all kind of falls into place, you know, why you're kind of battling through the different movements. What, you know, if you remember when you started the teacher course to when you finished, what were your main takeaways from that course?
Well, I came for a physical practice and I thought it was just a workout, like, yeah, we're going to do some stretches, get a bit stronger, and this is going to be my new workout routine. And what I had no idea was that it's more of a work in, and that the tools are so vast to improve your life in so many different ways that I realized there's way more to this practice that I need to find out about to empower your life. So it goes way beyond just like the physical practice, and you can explore so many deeper layers of your mental health, your emotional health, your psychology, and yeah, it's just, you can go so deep with it. And that was the biggest takeaway for me.
So you became hooked and kept going back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When did Bali become a possible place for you to live?
It happened pretty suddenly. I came out about a year and a half ago for a 6-week training. And this was just after the boat I was on got sold and my position was dissolved. And so I came out for 6 weeks to do a training. And at the end of the training, I decided to stay. And I had half a suitcase of yoga clothes with me. Most of my belongings were back in the UK. And it was a practice of detachment from my material possessions. And yeah, I was just like, I'm going to stay, I'm going to live here. And I didn't know if I was going to find a job. I didn't know where I was going to live or how to get a visa or anything, but I made it work and just trusted that things would fall into place.
Wow. So you didn't have a visa or anything. You were like, you had to do it all.
Yeah, I had to do it all. I had no plan. No plan at all. Just trusted that I would figure it out. By that point, I was, you know, I just turned 34. And I was like, do I want to go back to yachting? And my heart said, no, there's some serious things happening here in Bali that you need to be here for. And so I stayed.
No way. So what did you do? Like you did a training.
Yeah. Did a training. The trainers asked me if I wanted to work in their brand new studio they were opening, and gave me this amazing opportunity to start teaching full time as a yoga teacher. And I jumped in. I was like, yeah, I'm doing it. Yeah. I need to share this. I need to share this incredible knowledge with people.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so you've decided to stay. You're going to be a full-time yoga teacher. What do you know? What family relationships like? Were you really free and single to be able to just go, yeah, sure, I can do that for a bit? Or was there a bit more thinking behind it?
Yeah, I had been in a long relationship prior to that decision, and it was exactly as you say, eat, pray, love. So there was a
I knew
breakup
it was in there
that
somewhere.
happened. There was a breakup. We were together for a long time, 11 years on the yacht together, and we decided to part ways, and that was when I decided, well, I'm staying in Bali.
I knew it was in there somewhere. It was somewhere. So anybody who's listening, if you haven't read Eat, Pray, Love, like when did I read it? Basically, Eat, Pray, Love. There is a movie. Don't watch it. It's not as good. It's all right, but it's not as good. Definitely don't watch the movie before you read the book, for sure. Because what I liked about the book is she was really honest about what was kind of going on in her head. Do you know what I mean? These questions that women ask ourselves. She was very, very honest about wanting more, but not really knowing what that more was, that kind of that purpose, that kind of fulfillment. The story is she had the stereotypical life, married, career, all of that kind of stuff, but if she wasn't satisfied, then you kind of have this long-term relationship breakup and stuff like that. I don't even know. Maybe it has only just come out, but it's one of those things. So she goes to three different countries, and Bali is the last country that she goes to. And I love the fact of her character. Like, did you have you met like a gorgeous South American man while you're there? Have you practiced
Maybe
some really
several.
interesting tantric sex positions? It's really, honestly, I strongly recommend it for anybody. Don't be scrolling stuff on your phone. Actually, do the old-fashioned thing and read books on board. It's one of my saving things about being on board is the internet is great. And but I love a good box set and everything else, but it was a great opportunity for me to read, and there's some fantastic books out there. But that was quite an inspirational. That's probably the first female book that I've read where, a bit like you, really, she didn't have a clue what she was doing. She was just going to go and see what happens.
I would say I'm the living manifestation of that book. That's like the story of my life the last year and a half.
But when the book was released, like they did like this whole, not long afterwards, Oprah had Elizabeth Gilbert on, they did this whole show, and basically the Bali was inundated with women trying to discover themselves for like a few years. Like, women were reading this book. I'm going, you know what I need to do? I need to go to Italy, I'm going to go to India, and I'm going to go to Bali. So there's really this whole show that's like, you know what Oprah's shows used to be like? It's just like a mass of women, and they'd all read, obviously, all read the book, and it is quite interesting. I've read some of her stuff afterwards. She's gone a little bit off it, probably not as raw as what she is in Eat, Pray, Love, but highly, highly recommend for any woman that wants to justify just doing something completely random. Especially when you're trying to explain it to family members and stuff. Heartbreak is a great motivator as well, I think. But yeah, I knew that was in there somewhere. Have you gone? You obviously you've been to Italy. Have you been to India? Because obviously that's a great yoga place too, no?
I've been to India on the cruise ships though, so we only stopped for one day. But it's on the list. It's on the
It's
list.
on the list. Still on the list. So you're in Bali, like you said. Like, this we get to the depressing bit for me. Like, you're in Bali, living your best life. Your best Elizabeth life out there. Great name. There's lots of really good Elizabeths, really, really good throughout history if you collect it. I'm a collector of great women at the moment, and it's a good, strong name. There's some fantastic Elizabeths, and that obviously she's quite a good one. So it's all panning out really well. You're still there. So what did you say? You've been there a year and a half.
Yeah.
And you contacted me because you want to get me to come over there and do a retreat. Is that not right?
Yeah.
I have to. I might actually read Eat. Well, no, I won't read Eat, Pray, Love again because I'll probably end up divorcing my husband before I come over.
I'll be here to hold you in case.
So you've been a teacher. What are you up to now?
You
reach out to me, and I always find it really interesting when women reach out to me because you've got something to say. So, like, this is a lot I wanted to do. So you've been doing being a teacher. What else has happened?
Yeah, I am teaching full-time at, some of the best studios in the island, and I wanted to do something more. And I guess there was part of me at one point that was kind of missing the industry and almost like, do I go back one day? You know, because there's this, the draw of the incredible salary and community and closeness that you have with the crew. And so I decided to create a retreat for Yacht Crew and bring some of my friends and new friends to Bali to experience some of the magic here. So I designed like a whole program of activities that are really tailored for what I believe crew really appreciate. And it'll be a challenge.
Can I come?
It's for current crew and also ex-crew, because I feel like even when you leave the industry, you're still kind of hardwired into this, like, go, 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 I must work and succeed and push. And so this retreat is really a reminder that it's okay to slow down, that it's okay to have time for yourself to recharge. And so there's going to be tons of fun activities, but complete freedom to choose what you join in. And of course, I've designed some of the workshops and classes to teach crew the tools they need to rewire the nervous system and find a way to stay balanced. No matter where you are in the world, you can do these practices anywhere. That's what I do.
I quite like that. I think it would be quite nice. I've never been to Bali. It'd be nice. I was actually thinking about it the other day. You know, like I said, I kind of been through phases with yoga. Like, I've done it really intensely, probably for a few years. Then it's dropped off for whatever reason. I got back into it after my daughter was born, and then life just got really hit. Since we moved house, I kind of not really got back into it. So I think it would be a worthwhile venture to just crash course myself back in, perhaps not teacher training, but, you know, I could be vegan for a bit and do yoga 8 hours a day. As long as there's not much else to do in the rest of it.
It's not just going to be all yoga. It's going to be like all of the best healing practices. So there'll be like sound healing and some of the Balinese traditional healing rituals as well. But also the juicy stuff like massages, pampering, time in nature, and time to reconnect with yourself, because, you know, yacht crew don't often have a lot of time for themselves on board. So everything's organized, and we're going to be going in waterfalls and the ocean. And
horrendous. Awful time. But I'm sure I'll tough it out. My husband when he gets back. I need to go. It's research purposes. It sounds delightful. My stepson is actually on board, and one of the big things that I've said to him is what I regret not doing when I was on board is actually having a holiday, because what you find is with your leave, you're desperately trying to see the people that obviously aren't part of the yachting world, and it's not relaxing. You know, you'll get in a car, you'll drive 5 hours, see some people, then you'll fly here and you'll see some more, and it's not a holiday. It's not pure rest, you know, and especially on the older contracts when you kind of had at most like 2 months off. You have to go and see your family, because otherwise you never. So then when do you get to actually have a holiday? And like you said, to turn off and, you know, recharge. It's very common in the yachting industry that doesn't happen. But then that's just a lot of that is the nature of the work. So I think, so what's the plan? You know, you're doing retreats, you're going to live in Bali forever, find yourself a nice South American guy.
Gosh, the plan is to keep going, keep teaching, keep offering, keep designing workshops, retreats, and I don't have a huge, like, long-term plan, just seeing how each year goes. I think sometimes we can get overwhelmed with the bigger picture, and I think it's nice to remind yourself to really come back to that present moment and just enjoy, like, what you're doing in the moment. So at the moment, that is the focus, to take one step at a time, enjoy, and keep exploring. And I think that's one of the biggest gifts I gave myself in yachting, is using my time off of yachts to explore the things that light me up. And it reminds me of something my mum always taught me, is to follow your fun. And whenever you follow what lights you up, what is fun for you, you'll always be successful. And yeah, that's my ethos kind of around the retreat, is to enjoy ourselves and have fun and connect with ourselves. Yeah. Like, explore, depending who's on the retreat, perhaps it's going in and exploring those things. What lights me up? What am I passionate about? And then start to direct your life in that way. And ultimately that can help you build a life outside of yachting as well.
Yeah. Well, it's like, and also it's pretty cool to do, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if I'm going to, you know, try and reconnect with who I am, why not do that in a tropical paradise?
You know?
It's better than doing it in Southampton, that's for sure.
For sure.
No offense to anybody who's listening, lives in Southampton.
But love you, mum. Love you, family.
Bali, Southampton. It's not, there's not a lot in it, really, I would say. Right, so to finish off, we always ask about three pieces of advice if you were talking directly to a young lady in the laundry right now.
I would say, number one, be smart with your savings and investments, because you can get wrapped up in the lifestyle, in the luxury of no limits and spending all of that hard-earned cash. So spend it wisely, enjoy it, but set yourself up for your future so that you don't get stuck in the industry. They call it the golden handcuffs. So it's gonna gift you with freedom when the time feels right. Second piece of advice is to use your time off to explore what you might like to do after yachting. Explore your hobbies, what you're passionate about, things that lift you up and make you feel good. And that ties in with creating the life you want to live post yachting. And the third piece of advice would be to discover what your middle path means. So, again, like having boundaries on board and knowing when it's time to go home, knowing in your body, like listening to those inner signals when you need rest, and like listening to that intuition that is deep within all of us.
Yeah, I would agree. If you want to work out whether you're tired or not, lay in your bunk and try and read. Because if you try and you fall asleep, you're tired. Like, it's a really easy indicator of whether you need sleep or not. Because as soon as you start reading, you pass out. Like, yeah, I need sleep. If you actually can read for extended period, you're okay. It's always a good gauge. Obviously, read, eat, pray, love. As well, you know, why not, ladies? It is a good read. It is a very good read. Especially for the ones that are more, us lot that are quite adventurous in our lives. Okay, to finish off, what's your craziest story? Can actually be it, like, so we've had some disgusting ones recently, which people about just being grossed out on board. But it can be crazy. It could be sensitive, it could be anything, but like, if what story pops into your head when you're put on the spot?
I'll keep it light. I'll keep it light. I guess one of the craziest things that happened several times over the years is observing several hundred thousand US dollars be thrown around the room as gifts to the crew. And yeah, that's
What?
my
Literally
favorite memory
throwing
of
money at
yachting.
you.
Yeah, throwing packets of money towards the crew, just like tens of thousands. Here you go. Thanks.
Raining money. Be like,
Anymore?
God, I wished I concentrated more in sports to catch this. You're like, oh shit, should have practiced catching more at school. Throwing money at wow, you have some boots. Throwing money around the place. Never had that before. Yeah, it's pretty bonkers on board, That's a bit different to the last one. What did they say? Somebody else, was it last couple ones that like somebody was saying that she found fish in bed, dried fish under the
Oh,
mattress.
lovely.
Why?
Nice.
Why?
Well, crew like
Firstly,
to
I'm
play
not.
these tricks on each other, don't they?
Well, yeah, the dried fish, like that's below the belt. If that's a prank, that's not good at all.
It reminds me of yes, there were a couple of stories on my last boat. I think a giant frozen fish ended up in one of the crew's suitcase, and also a leg of Serrano ham ended up in one of the crew's suitcase, only to be discovered by security on their way through the airport.
Oh no, bloody deckhands. It's always them, isn't it? Always
It's always
them.
the
Led on by the
deckhands.
first officer. First officers pretend to be responsible, but they're basically a deckhand in disguise.
That's it.
That's funny. I actually find that quite funny, but I would hate it if it happened to me. I could probably cope with the ham, but definitely not the fish, not in my luggage. I'd be like, oh. That's not ideal having ham in my luggage, but I know how good it is, so I'll take that. Especially if it's come off the boat, it's going to be like the best, like the best ham you'll ever have. Thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. I definitely want all of the information about your retreats. I will be talking to my husband shortly about why I need to go. I'm not really sure how I'm going to pitch it yet, but I'll think of a way to do it. And he goes on golf days. You know, he goes away for golf, like for 4 days, wherever, although he says he's working. I think it's only fair, you know.
Yeah.
It should do it. But we please send all of the information of your retreat, and we will make sure that obviously it goes out with the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much. It's been great speaking with you. Yeah, thanks.
It has been quite enjoyable, considering I'm just annoyed that I'm not there. here in a wet, grey UK. But thank you very much. If, dear listeners, you've enjoyed this episode and you want to go on a retreat to Bali, let me know. Maybe we could do a whole group and then we can record what it's like to go on Laura's retreat. That'd be quite cool. Any other mothers out there that are listening that might be able to get some time off? We can go en masse as well as like the crew on board. If you've enjoyed this episode, there are many others, but until we speak again, take care of yourself. Goodbye.